it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He got him, and the Red Sox rally from behind and take game one of this wild card 3-1.
The baseball yesterday was outstanding. The pitching all day long, incredible. Started with Skubal in the Tigers game. Excellent sort of collective pitching in the Cubs-Padres game. And then last night, that Yankees-Red Sox game, you knew the environment was going to be amazing. I mean, that place was an unbelievably lit atmosphere. But to have Chapman come in for a four-out save after Garrett Crochet retired 17 consecutive Yankees, but Chapman in the ninth, bases loaded, nobody out, up 3-1, and to get out of it the way he did, it was great sports theater last night. Baseball always provides it this time of year, and day one was really, really good. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, I mean, when they loaded the bases up in the bottom of the ninth with nobody out, I thought for sure something big was coming. Stanton had the first opportunity, and I thought this is going to light the night up. He's going to hit something out of the park, or he's going to hit, you know, a double, which is going to score two and maybe three and win it. He went down, Chisholm went down, and then Grisham struck out swinging to end the game on a 101-mile-per-hour four-seam fastball. It was riveting last night to watch Chapman go back and beat his former team with a four-out save. When he came in the eighth, there was a runner on, and it, you know, it really bothered him. He ended up, you know, being charged a base on throwing over for a third time to keep the runner pinned to first. Great, great baseball on day one. We've got another quadruple header today with the same lineup, same order. Detroit-Cleveland with now Detroit having a chance to eliminate the Guardians, after. I wonder if people in Cleveland deal with it the same way we do. I don't know what the answer to that is. Meaning, when you say Indians, yeah, it's okay. Like you say Redskins, we get it. It's fine. It's fine. I have no idea. But after the historic 15.5 game comeback from July 8th to the American League Central crown, they are on the verge of going down in two straight. Cubs, Padres, same thing, and the Yankees will try to stay alive, as will the Reds. The Reds were a massive underdog. I would have much rather, I know a lot of you Nats fans are like, oh, it's so great the Mets didn't make the playoffs. I wanted to see Juan Soto. I wanted to see Soto against the Dodgers. Can't wait to see Bryce against the Dodgers in the next round. Good baseball this time of year. We always forget about it. We'll have hockey a week from tomorrow night and basketball a few weeks away. But will it be easy to watch the Wizards and the Capitals this year? John Oran's going to jump on with us at 11:25 to explain the developing situation, especially for you and me, YouTube TV people, watching our hometown teams when their seasons begin. I got this from, where is it? I had it here a second. I got this from Daniel J. Kevin, the 10-minute overtime is a joke. The new rule is going to lead to situations in which a tie is more probable. Yes, Daniel J., I've been talking about this since they changed the rule. I like the fact that both teams are now going to be guaranteed a possession in the NFL regular season. That rule had changed in the playoffs a few years ago after, remember, New England in Mahomes' first AFC title game, went to overtime, got the ball, and Mahomes never had a chance to touch the football. And then we had the same thing in the Buffalo-Kansas City playoff game, that unbelievable game from a few years ago. Buffalo never had a chance to touch the football. Yeah, I like that they've moved that rule into the regular season, but you can't have it be a 10-minute overtime. Safety is always the, you know, the preference here and is always the default. The problem is that, A, you could potentially end the game on one possession. We saw last Monday night, a week ago Monday night, the Detroit-Baltimore game. We saw the Lions go on an 18-play, 10-minute, 37-second drive. You could do that in overtime, especially if you're intentionally trying to milk the clock. Now, the other team has two timeouts that they can use defensively, and there's a two-minute warning, but you could certainly see and envision an overtime game ending with either a field goal at the gun to win it with the other team not getting a chance. And just so you know, it's a 10-minute overtime. So if somebody takes the ball on the kickoff, and let's just say they after a penalty, they start from their own 11-yard line. So it's a long drive possibility. And they go on a long drive, and the other team burns their timeouts, and you get beyond the two-minute warning. Well, that team on offense is then, if they're in position to do it, they're going to do what they would do at the end of regulation. They're going to take a knee, they're going to run the clock down, and they're going to kick a walk-off field goal. And at that point, no, the rule does not extend the overtime time-wise to guarantee the other team a possession. So actually, the other team isn't guaranteed a possession. They just will get possession if there's time left on the clock. But beyond that, it's not just a walk-off possibility. What if you score a touchdown with a minute 35 left in overtime, or even 2 minutes left, or 2.5 minutes left in overtime? Now the other team has to match for a touchdown in a lot less time, potentially with some timeouts left, maybe not, and they've got to approach that offensive possession much differently. The NFL's got to change this. They've got to go to a 15-minute overtime, or we will end up with the possibility of more ties, meaning, you know, let's just say a long drive ends in a field goal, and then the other team only has time to get in range for a field goal. I thought the Packers were way too passive offensively. If you stayed up and watched the game on Sunday night, Dallas, first of all, decided to kick on a fourth and goal situation when Parsons chased down and tackled Prescott from behind. It actually was registered as a zero gain, but that is a sack by statistical rule, and Parsons was credited with the sack. Dallas decided not to go for it and go for the touchdown. They kicked the field goal. And then Green Bay got very passive on their possession when they got down deep into Dallas territory with still well over a minute to go in the game. And they decided they were going to play almost for either a walk-off touchdown or a walk-off field goal to tie, because they didn't want to end up kicking a field goal and leaving time left for Brandon Aubrey, who now, you know, essentially you're one completion away after a big kickoff return from Turpin from kicking a field goal. You know, that's playing into it too. Now, we have seen in the two overtime games this year, the Giant-Cowboy game and the Cowboy-Packer game, the team that has won the toss has elected to kick, which is exactly what I thought would happen, because you want to know what you need when you get the ball back. And if you get the ball back down three or down seven, you now have four downs. There's an advantage to taking the ball second, unless there's no time left, which is the scenario that I just painted that is possible in a 10-minute overtime. I think we will see teams continue to choose kickoff in overtime. It's the right move. It's the thing that Kyle Shanahan couldn't figure out in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. You kick off because, assuming, and it is more likely than not, you're going to get a possession. When you get that possession, you know exactly what you need. We need a touchdown. We need a field goal. You know, whatever it is, it's the reason that in the college overtime rule, you never take the ball first. You always take the ball second. You have four downs now, not three. Punt is no longer an option if you're behind. for sure. You have the knowledge of exactly what you need. But yeah, I do think that the NFL, in, you know, what they typically do, they will, you know, the default is on safety, and they're concerned about another 5 minutes for, by the way, how many games a year? 10, 12 games a year that would A, go to overtime and then go beyond 10 minutes in the overtime. Now, with this new rule, it's more likely than not that you would go beyond 10 minutes versus the old rule, but they're going to have to extend it to 15 minutes. I completely agree with you, Daniel J. Appreciate that. From Garrett, Kevin, so we've discussed the problems, but to go full Sheehan, what's the solution to the defense? Yeah, that is kind of, you know, what they have to figure out more than we do. But of course, we like to play coach and GM when it comes to this sport. And I agree. There's a solution here. First of all, you do have to identify what the problems are to come up with a reasonable solution. And I think that's part of the problem with coming up with the solution. I am not averse to having this conversation and inviting some of your ideas on what the defensive solution is. But you have to identify the problem, and you've got to be sure of what the problem is before you come up with a solution. And I think that's the problem right now. I mean, I have talked to a number of people who have all essentially said the same thing. It's not one thing. It's not Joe Witt Jr. exclusively. It's not Marshawn Lattimore exclusively. It's not Mikey Sanristil playing on the inside versus the outside exclusively. It's not Bobby Wagner being caught in coverage exclusively. It's not Daron Payne having one great game and then missing a bunch of tackles in the next game exclusively. See how I took a shot at one of my favorite players? I did go back and watch the All-22. Daron Payne missed a bunch of tackles. Man, there is nobody that is as good as he is when he's on and as absent at times as he is when he's not. More on that later on. But the issue, at least I believe, based on some of the conversations I've had, is not exclusive to one area. Now, that makes it hard to come up with what the solution is. Now, maybe you have a different view, and you've identified the problem. It's Joe Witt Jr.'s scheme. It's Joe Witt Jr.'s play calling. It's Marshawn Lattimore. It's the safeties. It's Quan Martin. He's not, you know, a deep, you know, safety. He's not a free safety. He's really better in the box. Whatever you think it is. I think there are a couple of issues here. I think that, number one, when you see that much coverage miscommunication, there is an element of coach, scheme, play calling involved. Because it's not been just one player that has struggled in coverage. We've had a couple of players. The safeties have struggled. Will Harris, you know, is going to be a loss and will be felt. But in that Green Bay game, he got fooled multiple times by the Packers, you know, where he thought, you know, I'm in run fit when actually here goes Tucker Kraft right by him. And Tucker Kraft was his responsibility. So I think that coverage and the miscommunications and the issues they've had in coverage, some of that has to speak to, is it too complicated? Is it the right scheme? Is it the right play call? Is it the right play call for some situations, but not for that particular situation? Why are we having Marshawn Lattimore exclusively identified as, we can't let him press off the line of scrimmage, so we're going to motion to death this team because we know they're not going to pass him off. We know that they're not going to switch in a basketball term. You know, there's some element of that. There's no doubt in my mind. The other part, though, is, yes, bad tackling can be a coaching issue, but it can also be a personnel issue, an execution issue. They were a bad tackling team on Sunday. Bad. against a team that you couldn't be a bad tackling team against. You can't bad tackle Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier and expect to get off the field, you know, and force punts. There were two punts in the game. And let's face it, one of them was at the end of the first half when Atlanta really wasn't trying to score at the very end when they gave up on that opportunity. So it was really one legitimate punt in the game. You're not going to win many games unless you get turnovers forcing the other team to punt once in a game. So I think the problem is multi. I think it's all over the place. I also think that they've improved in an area in which they were really, really bad last year. They're a better run-stopping team this year than they were last year. And watching the All-22 of the game, you know, one of our callers, Aveen, who's always got a pretty sharp opinion, and he said, you know, I'm actually not that concerned about the run defense after Sunday. There were a lot of really good run stops in the game. You just played a special running back in Bijan Robinson who can make people miss, who can break tackles, etc. But they were there for a lot of the stops. And I think that's true now. I think in looking at the game a little bit more closely, they had a chance to have a much better run-stopping day. It also could have been worse had they, you know, it could have been worse in that Atlanta really did seem to catch them at times in defenses where Bijan had even bigger opportunities. But what I was going to say is this. The tackling was bad. The run fit consistency wasn't. They were there for a lot of plays, and they had six tackles for loss in the game on rundowns. That's really impressive. You know, take away the one sack in the game, which was Luvu's sack. Wagner, Lattimore, actually, Dorrance Armstrong, Kinlaw, that was a memorable one. Payne's was the play on Bijan Robinson that forced the fumble. And then Eddie Goldman on a third and one. And there were other opportunities. So I do think that through four games, I feel better about their ability to stop the run. Or I'm not going to tell you that they're going to be a great run-stopping team or even a good run-stopping team, but they're going to be a lot better than they were last year, and that was the biggest issue on defense, was stopping the run. This year, through four games, it appears that the bigger issue is in coverage. So what's the solution? For me, I think the coverage issue is the issue. I'm going to give you some of my conversation with Fred Smoot the other day, who came up with a bit of a solution and a plan. And I'll just share some of it with you. And it was to simplify everything. That's always kind of a default on when things are going wrong. Let's simplify it, especially when you've got younger players. Not that Washington has younger players. They've got one super young player, two of them, really, and San Ristill and Amos in the back end. I would suggest the following, and I'm not even sure I'm right about this, but I think they're better against the run. They've been very porous in coverage. For me, in looking at the coverage, the worst cover guy, whether it's because of motions, whether it's because of scheme, but even when he is lined up and playing press, Marshawn Lattimore has been the weakest corner for this team. And yes, it's not looking great in terms of, you know, the trade, which, again, I would never go back in 2020 hindsight this thing. I loved the trade in the moment. I thought this is a recalibration of the recalibration. They should be going for it. And it's not a rental. If it had been a rental, I would have had a problem with it in the moment. It wasn't a rental. This guy had contract life left. And the issue with him was just being healthy. Wasn't healthy last year, is healthy this year, and isn't performing at a high level. I'm not discounting the real possibility that part of this is on scheme, play calling, etc. I think there's probably some of that involved. But if you ask me for one thing that I wouldn't have a problem if they ended up doing it, it would be to bench Marshawn Lattimore, move Sanra Still outside, and bring in Igben Ogeni to play the slot as he did last year before the trade. You know, I also think there's a bit of a safety issue without Will Harris. I agree Quan Martin's not playing at the level I thought he was playing at the end of last year. You know, Jeremy Reeves is certainly a hustler and a hitter, but the safety position is a bit dicey right now. Maybe Darnell Savage can help on that end in the coming weeks as he gets more acclimated. Maybe Tyler Owens has to play more. But if you're asking me to, I have to give at least one answer to a solution defensively, I'm just going to go with, I think Marshawn Lattimore is playing poorly, whether it's scheme issued or not. And I would look to move him to the bench and go with Mikey Sanra Still, who played very well on the outside last year, and with Trey Amos, and then bringing in Noah Ai as my nickel corner. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. I want one thing that you would do defensively to try to improve the situation, which right now, in this moment, after the game on Sunday against Atlanta, looks like it's developed into the weakness and the issue with the team for the second consecutive year. Defense was the weakness last year. I know that there were outstanding performances against the Giants, to the Raiders, lesser extent with the Raiders. The Raiders had some big plays. They had some big plays in the passing game. We know that. Now, Will Harris left the game, and maybe it was an adjustment there that they couldn't make in-game. But I want one thing that you feel confident would be a part of the solution defensively. I gave you mine, and I'm hesitant to give it because I think, I believe that what I've heard, that this is not just one issue. And by the way, I think in Quinn's tone, in the way he spoke after the game and the way he spoke on Monday, I think you recognize that he is concerned about some of the things that are going on defensively. Look, there are extreme measurements. This team's already, by the way, proven they'll make changes if they think there are issues. We've seen it on offense. Brandon Coleman inactive, and Chris Paul in, Allegretti benched, Andrew Wiley in. So I'm not going to be surprised if on Sunday there is a surprise development with personnel on defense. But, you know, the extreme would be, and I don't even think this is a possibility, to fire Joe Witt Jr. I do not think that's a possibility. What would be an extreme, and I don't think this is a great possibility, but I would not discount it if there's another two or three games like the game on Sunday against Atlanta, especially if they lose some of those games because of their defense, to see Dan Quinn take play-calling responsibilities defensively. You know, this is the first job he's had in which he hasn't done that. That's not what my one solution would be right now. If I had to go to one, because you're forcing me to pick one, I think Lattimore is struggling. And I'm sure it's not all him, but he has struggled more than anybody else. Maybe Quan Martin, you know, maybe the safeties in general, but Marshawn Lattimore would be the one that I would say, all right, I have to make one change. I'm moving Sanra Still back outside, and I'm moving Noah Ai into the slot. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I want one solution. You have to come up with one idea to fix the defense. What's that one idea? Kevin Sheehan Show right here on the Team 980. We're also on the Odyssey app. If you want to download that, you can listen to us wherever you are, wherever you go. And you can watch this show on the Team 980's YouTube channel. Just hit the subscribe button and the like button when you get there.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Dan. In terms of, the pass rush yesterday, what did you see that you thought led to not as much success as you've seen from that unit?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I thought, when are we going to take our shots, when to go? I thought early on, I thought they did a nice job of, getting rid of the ball quickly, to get, intermediate throws to go. But the ones that are down the field, Howard, those are the ones that we've got to capitalize on. I thought we could have stunted more to try to, put the offensive line in some disadvantages to go. When you have good balance like they had yesterday, you're not teeing off to go. But I do feel like, we've got to get them off the spot. We had a number of chances, and we didn't nail those yesterday like we had the week before. That would be my main take. And then, honestly, like I said, at the end of the game, not being able to close Howard on the third downs, I thought that was, the biggest factor here. We had some chances here to get him in some third downs that you can get off the field. And when we didn't, and Joe tried, three different ones, a zone, a man pressure. And so we got to be able to nail those when those come up. That's for sure.
Dan Quinn on Monday, after he had watched the tape of the loss Sunday in Atlanta, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. One solution, your number one solution, if you're forced to give one to fix the defense, is what? Let me just once again reiterate, because this is important from my standpoint. I'm much more into solutions than I am going back and playing the blame game, even though we do it a lot. I think it's hard to come up with a solution when you're not exactly sure what the problem is. I think the problem is multi defensively. What's also ironic about this whole conversation is we couldn't have had this conversation after the Giant game or even the Raider game for that matter. I mean, the pressure they got on Geno Smith and the disruption up front against the Raiders was left nobody thinking that there were any issues defensively. This is the up and down roller coaster nature of this league. But I think what we've seen now against the two better and more capable offensive teams in this league, and they've got several of them coming up, over the next several weeks, I think that, there's an issue here. Once again, this looks like the problem. Taking, a macro view of this team offensively, look, without Jaden and without Terry, they put up 27 points. Without, by the way, getting, super short fields, except in the Sanristil situation. And the kickoff situation. That was a big kickoff return by Luke McCaffrey. It does appear, we might have a different opinion this coming week if they shut down Justin Herbert, if they do to the Chargers what the Giants did to the Chargers. But I think there's a problem. I think we would all admit it. Identifying what the problem is or what the problems are is harder. Again, my information is nobody believes it's just one thing. Nobody believes it's just scheme and play calling. Nobody believes it's just Marshawn Lattimore. Nobody believes it's the safeties exclusively. Keim wrote a good story, and I actually just read it for the first time because somebody just sent it to me during the break yesterday on the defense, and there's some good quotes in here. Dorrance Armstrong, we've got to figure out what we're doing wrong and get it right ASAP. There's definitely a belief out there that there's something going on, and it's an issue. And again, it's not just one thing. John had some really interesting data and information in his story. In each of the next 6 weeks, Washington's opposing quarterback ranks in the top 15 total QBR. Four of those in the next 6 weeks are top nine in total QBR. And five of them rank in the top 12 for pass plays that gain 15 yards or more. Washington currently ranks last in the league in the number of such plays allowed. Pass plays that go for 15 yards or more. There's a lot of discussion from guys like Jeremy Reeves and Will Harris, you know, reiterating some of what Joe Witt talked about last week, which is eye discipline, you know, eye control, communication on the back end. Washington's allowed 20 pass plays of 15 yards or longer, and they allowed 8 on Sunday against Atlanta. This is an issue for sure. The other piece of information, very interesting from John in this story. No team has allowed more pass plays of 15 yards or more while facing motion than Washington with 11, and 6 of those occurred Sunday. Atlanta gained 328 yards Sunday while using motion. That tactic also hurt them in Week 2 versus Green Bay, which gained 187 yards when using motion versus Washington, 126 through the air. So in their 2 losses, they've given up 839 yards total, but 515 yards of that 839 in the 2 losses to Green Bay and Atlanta were versus motion. And remember, that's not just passing yards. That's passing and rushing yards. They got something going on back there. One solution, one idea. I think it's really hard to come up with this, and I think I'm asking a question that it's going to be very hard for you guys to answer because we don't have all of the information here. But if you forced me to make one decision, just because I do think he's struggling, whether it's all about him or just partially about him. Of the corners, and Sanra still hasn't been great, although I thought he played better on Sunday. I thought he was actually good in the run game when there were a lot of missed tackles. But my one solution, gun to head, forced to make one, I'm going to sit Lattimore for a while, and I'm going to move Sanra still outside and Noah I back inside. What's your one solution? It could be extreme. Like, we're moving on from Joe Witt Jr. They're not going to do that. Or the lesser of the extreme answers, Dan Quinn takes over play calling. Or it could be personnel related. Or it could just be coach him up better. I will say one thing before I ask Max for his answer, and then we get to the phone lines. I talked about this yesterday because Quinn talked about, you know, the pass rush could have been better on Sunday, and that's true. But I don't think you can, even though the pass rush has been improved, run stopping's been improved, and the pass rush until Sunday had been fairly effective. Again, you have to say, caveat, 2 opponents were really not good on those days or set up to be good on those days offensively because they were really hurting along the offensive line. And in the Raiders' case, they weren't very good along the offensive line to begin with. And Washington dominated the line of scrimmage against the Giants and against the Raiders. But I think the one problem with saying, well, if we can just be consistent as a pass rush team, that will elevate the back end. That is true, but it's hard to be consistent pass rush-wise when you don't have a special pass rusher. And they don't. The Giants have 3 of them. They've got 4 of them, you could say. They've got Carter, they've got Burns, they've got Thibodeau, and they've got Dexter Lawrence. They have 4 A-level defensive players when it comes to disrupting an offense. Washington really doesn't have 1. They've got a couple of good ones. I think Armstrong's playing at a high level this year. I think, you know, Kinlaw's playing at a high level. But they don't have the guy that scares the crap out of the opposing offensive coordinator. They don't have the guy that elevates everything around them. There's so much attention on this player that everybody else gets to eat. And I think if you're relying on the pass rush to mask the back end issues week in and week out, there are going to be some games where they get lit up against good teams, good quarterbacks, because they don't have a guy week in and week out that can demand that team game plan around that player. Max, you have to come up with one idea to fix the defense. What is it?
There's been a lot said these past couple weeks since the start of the season about Marshawn Lattimore. It has not been great, especially in press man and like you said, against motion. One way that I think that we could kind of remove him from running with a guy would be not putting him on the bench, but putting him up top at safety. That's usually the dead man walking for.
You went Lattimore making a D'Angelo Hall late season career move to safety.
I'm throwing out ideas here. Things are not working.
You didn't trade three picks for Lattimore to be a safety.
It's true you didn't, but man, you got to make do with what you got at this point because it has not looked good.
Okay.
At any point.
By the way, that is one that I bet a lot of people out there listening haven't thought of. We move Lattimore to safety, and we move Sanristil outside with Amos and Noah I inside when we're nickel, right?
Yeah, and then if we need a more physical presence, we bring Jeremy Reeves down and put him in the box and have Marshawn Lattimore sit over top.
I think Quan Martin's a better box player.
Yeah.
I think he's more suited to be a closer to the line of scrimmage player. He just doesn't. I like Quan Martin. He doesn't have the range to play free safety. I don't think Reeves does either.
Yeah.
Safety is an issue with the loss of Will Harris.
Big time. He was a big a sticking point, especially through the first couple games that he was playing. He looked pretty good. Like he had some busts against Green Bay, but I mean, God knows the entire secondary did. So losing him is a big blow, and I don't know if you're going to get the same out of Darnell Savage. So Marshawn Lattimore, get back there, man. We'll put you 12 yards off the ball. Hope you don't get beat deep downfield.
All right, let's get to the phone lines. You got to come up with one solution to fix the defense. Kurt in District Heights, what's that one solution?
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
I'm well, Kurt.
I think you hit on all the points, really. It's really nothing to add, but the one thing you did mention is the one thing that I have to say. I think, you know, Mikey needs to go to outside, you know, because Mikey on the inside, I think long-term he's better on the inside, but there's a learning curve for him at the pro level on the inside. He went through that learning curve last year on the outside, so right now he's better on the outside. And put Noah Iron on the, you know, inside and sit Lattimore. But I just wanted to add, I think the coaching staff, they had some fool's gold there last year because their run defense was so bad. It made their pass defense look good in terms of the numbers. So I think that they went all in to fix the run, assuming that their pass defense was better than what it was. And I think that had a lot to do with what's going on now. You know, those points you made were great. And I think that's the move right there. But they also need to sit Lattimore and tell Lattimore to just play. If he gets beat by a step, don't hold. Don't be all in nobody's face, woofing and barking. Just play. If you get beat by a step, turn and look for the ball and play. I think that's what Lattimore needs to do. And he needs to sit out on the bench and think about that.
Yeah, keep in mind, and you make a great point, you know, the pass defense numbers, if you're just a box score reader or a stat line reader, you're like, wow, Washington had a pretty highly ranked pass defense. Well, that was because it was so easy to run against them, and they got run on much of the year, and they were nickel too much, and they got run on. But they knew there was an issue because they drafted Trey Amos. They traded for Marshawn Lattimore, you know, at the trade deadline. So they did recognize there's an issue. They liked Will Harris more than they liked Jeremy Chinn. They wanted an upgrade there. So it's just that they've lost Will Harris. And let's face it, if you look at this defense, there are a few players that we expected, you know, this year would take a big step forward from a really solid season last year. Sanristil is one. Luvu is another. And I think a lot of people were expecting Quan Martin, with the way the season ended for him, to take that next step forward. And they haven't gotten, you know, excellent performances from any of those. There's not been an indication that they've taken that next step. I was a big fan of Luvu last year. I think Luvu last year was debatably the second best player on the team. And, you know, if we're going to debate, you know, the where players rank, you have to start at number two because Jaden was clear, in a way, the best player on the team last year. I thought you could make the case for Luvu, and I was really excited to see what Luvu was going to develop into. It's only four games. It's only four games, but he hasn't been what he was last year. You got one fix, one go-to fix you've got to come up with for the defense. What is it? Mike in Silver Spring, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Kevin. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think Lattimore is past his prime. He's always a step or two behind. I don't really think he can cover anymore. So I'm in favor of benching him. I wasn't in favor of the trade in the first place. But I think something else that could help that is if Dan Quinn starts calling the defense. He's been a defensive guy pretty much his whole life. And I think he knows what he wants and what he needs. And I don't think it would take away from the defensive coordinator's position if Quinn took on that
responsibility. Oh, it would. That would be dead man walking in terms of Joe Witt Jr. as a defensive coordinator. Don't you think?
You really think so?
Yeah, I do. Well, I think if Quinn took back play calling from him, we'd have a new defensive coordinator next year.
Well, you know, maybe that's not such a bad thing, but I think Quinn would bring a lot to the defense, but Lattimore has got to go sit down.
Again, I appreciate the call. I don't feel strongly about any ideas that I have because, again, I don't know that we really understand what the issues are. Yes, the numbers when teams motion against them are not good. They're terrible. You know, for whatever reason, Quinn and, you know, over the years has an issue with Shanahan-style offenses. And they've been very bad against the two they have faced. Green Bay with Matt LaFleur and Zach Robinson, the OC in Atlanta. Although, actually, what Atlanta does is similar in many ways, but out of different formations. They're in the pistol a lot more than Jordan Love is. But yeah, I think it's hard, but for me it's like I can tell that Marshon Lattimore, no matter what situation he's been in, even if it's an advantageous situation, he has not played well. So that, you know, I could point to that. I could point to Bobby Wagner in coverage. You know, I could point to the tackling clearly, you know, in the last game. Is that a coaching issue? Not necessarily. That can be an execution issue because I'll tell you what, I think run defense, after going back and watching it, I think they were in good position to be even better results-wise against the run. It was their worst run defensive performance of the season, but it wasn't as bad as I think it felt when we were watching it. Like, I'll be the first to admit, when I saw Bijan Robinson's final numbers, 17 carries, 75 yards, I know he had the 69-yard swing pass, I thought he was at a buck 25 minimum. I thought he was at 5-6 yards a carry. He was at 4.5 yards per carry. Not good enough defensively, but it was better than what I thought statistically. And then when I watched it on the All-22, it was much better than I thought. There were a couple of players that I thought, you know, I didn't really identify any defensive players that played well. Deron Payne, one of my favorite players when he's on, too many missed tackles. Too many missed tackles for a lot of guys. And by the way, Bijan's going to make you miss a lot. Let's go to Montel in Frederick. You can make one defensive change to kind of create a better defense. What's that one change you'd make?
Hey, Kevin, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Montel.
I have a few things, but I'm going to give you the one. But I just wanted to go real quick because last year we had a conversation, and I conversated this one with you and Craig Hoffman, that Quan Martin is not the answer. He was one of the guys that I said that should go with St. Juice, but we got rid of half the problem. I just don't think Quan Martin is very good because of the angles that he takes on his playmaking. It's just totally off. But if you want to get down to what we need to change, I don't think we need to change anything personnel-wise. I just think we need to gel. It's a young group. We keep changing personnel. Chemistry is what these guys that I believe are missing. And the coaching staff really has to step it up for me because I think they're missing a lot of things. And Dan Quinn should take the play calling. But the reason why I say they're missing a lot of things is over on the offensive side of the ball. Kroski Merritt, he's your next Devon Achane, and you got to let him play ball.
Look, that's an offensive thing, and I'm with you. I think you gotta figure out and coach him up on this pass pro because, you know, at 6 yards per carry, I want that guy out there. And by the way, I'm fine with Rodriguez getting a lot more carries as well. Look, on Quan Martin, and I've already said this, I actually think he is an effective in-the-box safety when he plays in the box. What's very obvious is he's not good as a free safety. And I don't have, you know, the breakdown of free safety to box, you know, alignments in terms of the percentage of snap counts that he's out there. But I'm going to guess that he's been out there a lot more at free than he's been in the box. Will Harris was more in the box, and I think Reeves is more in the box. I think Quan Martin actually has good instincts in the box. I don't like him as a free safety. I totally agree with you on that. Max, see if you can get... I am curious. See if True Media or any of those places have numbers on Quan Martin lining up at free versus strong safety. I think I've seen him play a lot more as a free safety than a strong in the box safety. Thanks for the call, Montel. Everybody stay on hold. We'll get to more of your calls next. You have to come up with one fix defensively. What is it?
All right. Happy October, everybody. It is Wednesday. The Commanders, they have signed Robbie Chosen. That was yesterday. They also worked out River Craycraft and Willie Snead. Craycraft was with the team during the final stretch of training camp while Willie Snead crossed paths with wide receiver coach Bobby Engram in Baltimore. The Cleveland Browns, they have announced that Dylan Gabriel will be taking the reins on the starting job going forward. He's taking over for Joe Flacco after they started just 1-3 through the first four games. Third round pick now becomes the Browns' 41st quarterback since the year 1999. And the Caps, they get a preseason win over the Columbus Blue Jackets last night. The goal scorers were Tom Wilson, Boone Jenner, Ilya Protas, Boone Jenner again, my goodness, Andrew Crystal, and Connor McMichael all last night. While Logan Thompson played the full 60, he earns the win in the preseason for the Caps. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.